else on the committee could please move them. I don't sit on this committee.
Okay, there's an A1 amendment, I think. Did you? Okay, that's fine. Representative Vice Chair Salk moves the A1 amendment. Is there any discussion to that, or is this just to put it in the shape you would like it, or?
Mr. Chair, yes.
Okay. All right, any discussion? Ranking Member Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On the amendments, some of the people maybe haven't seen the bill or aren't familiar with, so it'd be nice to have a sort of an explanation of what the amendments are doing.
Sure. I see, Chair Dean, it looks like Ms. Bonowitz was maybe willing to...
Mr. Chair, I would, turn it over to Sam Bonowitz from the Secretary of State's office.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the tape, and just if you could just provide a brief description of the amendment at this point, that would be helpful.
Yeah. Chair, my name is Sam Bonowitz, Director of Government Relations with the Office of the Secretary of State. The A1 amendment is in response to the hearing that we had in the election subcommittee. There were a few concerns about some write-in language in requiring candidates to say that they want to fill out a form and submit that to their local election office, saying that they wanted to have their write-in votes counted. So we just removed that. We always want this bill to be very technical, non-controversial. So we just removed that. And then Representative New also requested that we include language that specifies that for special elections, they can't be held on a holiday or during the 4 days before or after a holiday. And this was included in the elections omnibus bill last year as well. And she just requested that that was included in this. So we did that. And then the A1 amendment, line 1.18, it just changes the voting equipment grant timeline to 2021 instead of 2022 to stay within this fiscal year.
Okay. Thank you. Any additional question? Representative Quall?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Looking at the A1 and the A2, they don't appear to be compatible. So is that A1 taking place of the A2?
Yeah, I have a note that the A2 has been withdrawn and will not be offered.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, any additional discussion to the A1 amendments? Okay, seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Okay, so then we also have the A3 amendment. Ms. Bonowitz, or Chair Dean, did you want to describe this one?
Well actually, can I introduce
Mr. Chair? Sure. Representative Elkins would like to move it.
Move the A3 amendment.
Sure. Okay.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Elkins. And I'll have Hennepin County come and speak to this.
Okay, sure. When you get down, if you could just identify yourself for the record and provide a brief description of the A3 amendment, that would be helpful.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Ginny Galms. I'm the elections manager for Hennepin County. The amendment before you gives the county auditor the option to offer absentee voting outreach to a couple of facilities that are not currently listed among facilities that we can do absentee voting outreach to. These include battered women's shelters and veterans' homes.
Any discussion? Okay, seeing none. Representative Heinrich.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have one question. Is there any limit for how many ballots one can witness right now?
Ms. Galms.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I believe that there is not currently a limit on the number of ballots that an individual can, and a number of absentee ballots that an individual can witness, no.
Representative Heinrich.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mm-hmm. Representative Quam, did you?
Mr. Chair, I was just through my mind, I was running the discussion from last committee, which basically says that when we send out ballots en masse to a facility, the Secretary of State clarified that there, one person could do them for all, so that there's not a second check and balance when this is switched over. In other words, the same person that collects all the ballots from the mail could fill them out and witness them. So that was, I think, part of the reason of asking is this opens up to less verification.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Quam. Is there any additional discussion to the A3 amendment? Chair Dean?
Chair Freiberg, I mean, the county has a process, I'm assuming, in which people verify and witness the submission of absentee ballots. And if you could speak to that,
sure.
That would be great.
Ms. Gelms.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The process is that we actually send a team of election judges out when we do absentee voting outreach. So there is a two-person team that is handling this absentee voting outreach. It's the same process that's currently used for residential facilities. It would be the exact same process. So it's actually election judges who are handling these absentee ballots and administering the process.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Gelms. Any additional discussion to the A3 amendment? Okay, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The amendment is adopted. So the bill is in the shape you would like. Chair Dean, would you like to discuss it? There was testimony and the bill was discussed pretty thoroughly in the election subcommittee. I'll certainly give some latitude here, but to the extent we cannot rehash issues that were discussed in the subcommittee, that would
and
be helpful.
And Mr. Chair and members, this bill is, would I be fair to say, 95% of the same bill that walked through this whole process last session. So and the session before that. So these are some changes that I believe that are very technical in nature. Granted, they're technical in nature, has some implications as well, but I think many members have had opportunities to ask, and of course Ms. Bonowitz is here to answer those specific questions that I may not be able to answer.
Okay. Thank you, Chair Dean. Representative Quam.
Thank you.
Well, actually, maybe I should just ask, is there anyone who would like to testify on House File 3429 for or against? Okay, seeing none, we'll go to member discussion. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And since I didn't hear 100% was in the bill that failed to pass the legislature and get signed, so it's a next attempt. So we should really hear what are the new things that are in this instead of the bill that failed last year.
Sure. Ms. Bonowitz appears to be nodding, so if you'd like to just discuss the new provisions in the bill, I think that would be helpful.
Yeah. As Representative Dean said, this bill has been heard. A lot of the provisions within this bill have been heard in both 2018 and 2019. In 2019, the House passed it on a bipartisan basis with, I think it was 126 votes for it. But this includes 12 new provisions that I'm happy to walk through. Section one, while this isn't a new provision, we tweaked the language a little bit from last year to allow the Safe at Home office the option to either print those materials directly from the statewide voter registration system or continue to request that from the county. And this is only because we learned that not all jurisdictions have their ballots in the statewide voter registration system. There are some townships that don't include their ballots in the statewide voter registration system. Section 2 includes residential treatment facilities and adult foster care homes as residential facilities for the purposes of facilitating same-day voter registration. This was a bipartisan bill in both the House and the Senate last year, so we included it within this bill. Section 17 and 18 simply updates the language used to describe the outer envelope with the voter's signature to be called the signature envelope rather than the return envelope, just for clarity's sake. And similarly updates the language from security envelope to secrecy envelope. And that is also in Section 20. Section 23 requires that a write-in candidate for governor or lieutenant governor file jointly with the person who seeks nomination as a candidate for the other office. And this would also apply to those running as write-in candidates for president and vice president. Section 28 allows mail balloting for any town or city with fewer than 400 registered voters, including those within the metro, the seven county metro region. Under current law, these towns and cities are only eligible if they are located outside of the metro counties. Sections 41 through 43, that extends the special election timeline while the legislature is in session by 14 days total. This is in response to recent special elections where absentee ballots were unable to get to the voter in a timely manner, or the voter wasn't able to return the ballot in a timely manner. And this was also discussed during the last hearing, committee hearing. Section 54 just clearly states that safe at home participants are able to cast their ballot in the manner provided for in Chapter 5. Although Minnesota statute says that the primary is to be conducted in the same manner as the state primary, therefore participants are able to vote as they do currently. We just thought having this explicitly within statute for clarity's sake was appropriate. Again, a lot of these amendments are very technical. This is one of them. Section 55 clarifies that some of the provisions within 207A.13, that's the presidential nomination primary, are specific only to the participating major primaries, such as printing ballots for the primary, parties providing the candidates to be placed on the ballot. That only applies to participating major parties. Section 56 removes the requirement that the voters' choice of political party will be public information, because this is no longer accurate. Still requires that we notify voters of the requirements of 207A.12, which is that we're recording that information. And then Section 57 extends the deadline that major political parties must get the Office of the Secretary of State their certified candidates for president and vice president, as well as their presidential electors, to allow for a later national convention for the RNC. And then Section 64 aligns the timeline. It extends the timeline of the 2017 voting equipment grants to June 30th of 2021 rather than of June 30th, 2020. So it just extends it for the counties and to spend those funds. And that's it.
Thank you. Is there any additional discussion for this bill? Representative Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question regarding subdivision 3 under section 23 about writing candidates. Typically, I'm thinking write-ins are tend to be spontaneous. Why would they have to, why do you have, find it necessary to say that they need to file within these parameters if it's a write-in candidate?
So just for members, this is line 19.11 that we're looking at. I think Mr. Gehring might have a response to the question here.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mason, just to be clear about the status of Section 23, paragraph B has been deleted as part of the author's amendment, so I think what you're asking about is no longer part of the bill.
Okay. It's Representative Mason?
Well, let me clarify. The only write-in I remember is Arne Carlson running for governor. And I don't remember how that was handled.
Ms. Bonowitz.
Chair, members of the committee, I don't know how that specific candidate was handled as a write-in, but Section 23, that whole paragraph and that provision has been removed from this admin bill in response to some concerns, some similar concerns that happened that were heard in the election subcommittee.
Okay. All
right. Thank you, Representative Mason.
Thank you.
Is there any additional discussion to the bill? Okay, seeing none, I will renew my motion that House File 3429, as amended, be re-referred to the State Government Finance Division. Actually, Chair Dean, any closing remarks? Sorry, I should have offered you that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I hope folks will vote for that.
Okay. So I'll renew my motion. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Chair Dean. Thank you, Ms. Bonowitz. So next item on the agenda is my bill here, so I'm going to hand off the gavel.
Chair Freiberg, go ahead and...
Sure. I would like to move my House File 3006. Is this going to the General Register? I know this has already been heard in State Government Finance. Ways and Means? Okay. I will move House File 3006 to the Ways and Means Committee.
So, Jarrett,
there is an amendment, am I right?
Actually, the amendment was, I decided not to move forward with the amendment. It was taken, it's still in the packet here, but I believe it was removed from the committee website yesterday.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to offer the A1 amendment and would request a roll call. I believe, think it's a pretty important amendment as it, as we are talking about who is going to oversee the funds. It does deal with the federal funds review process. I think it's a very important issue that the legislature has oversight. So I will be offering that amendment.
Mr. Chair, I believe the amendment was removed from the committee website, so I don't know that it's appropriate.
And Mr. Chair, we have it in our packet. And I'm sure it's staged outside as well, so.
Mr. Chair, how about I'd like to request a 5-minute recess. I'd like to make sure the procedure is done here properly. So could
just can we recess for 5 minutes just so that I catch up with where we're going here?
I think that would be good. Thank you.
We're in recess.
Starting to break down. That's how friendly it is.
Yeah. What you do now?
Well, you know it is. I'm that kind of guy.
Okay, we'll come back to order after our discussion here. What I understand is that.
Yeah.
Go ahead. I'll call.
Did you have a
representative? Is the motion on the table, or the motion was made? I believe Representative Nash made the motion, so I have a question on it. What exactly does this amendment do to change the bill?
Sure. There was some discussion in the state government finance division about a process where certain federal funding has to go through a procedure and then ultimately can get a recommendation from the Legislative Advisory Commission. My impression from state government finance was that that process would apply here. However, in the election subcommittee, it became apparent that it wouldn't apply. I've conferred with some people. I think this amendment is fine, and I would encourage members to support it. It's still the bill as amended would still allow the process of accepting federal funds to go forward. So, and we've spoken about it. So I would just encourage members to support this. Did you still? I don't know if Representative Mr. Chair. I don't know if Representative Nash still wants a roll call with that understanding, but I'm.
Representative Nash.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, if the chair is going to accept the amendment and allow the review of the legislature to be put in place, we can remove the roll call.
Okay. So anybody else have comment and or discussion about this amendment? If not, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Okay, the amendment is then in. And Chair Freiberg, go ahead and explain then the bill.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So this bill would put Minnesota in line with 46 other states. We've had these various discussions over federal funding through the HAVA program, the Help America Vote Act. Unfortunately, it's been caught up in kind of unrelated politics, and I don't feel that our election security system should get caught up in unrelated issues. So this bill just makes a very simple change. In order to accept the funding through the HAVA program, we have to pass legislative authorization. And as you know from the past couple of years, that process has gotten mired in politics. We didn't actually have election security passed in the 2018 session. It did ultimately because of the veto. But it did ultimately get approved in 2019, but it was only then after lots of unrelated issues related to election security. So with the amendment that was added, there is now an additional process that we will go through where there is the potential for review from the Legislative Advisory Commission. But even with that change, ultimately, it's possible that individual members of the Legislative Advisory Commission could cause some delays, but having spoken with some people about it, it's my understanding that it would ultimately come forward. So I think this bill does still make a positive change. It still puts in a process in place where there is some review involving legislators, but it would, I think, ultimately help protect our election security system, which is the most important thing. So
okay. I
encourage members support.
Secretary Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll try to be short. I hope that we've reached a consensus here, but this bill would repeal Minnesota Statutes 5.30. It was written in 2002. I think the only member here, unless I'm mistaken, who was here was...
I didn't look too.
Oh, no, that's right. You were 03. So I think it was signed in May of 03. Correction, it was after 2002. So you're the only one here who was around when that happened, Representative Nelson. So that same bill, when it was passed in 2003, which would require legislative sign-off in particular, like affirmative action and proactive action to sign off on the receipt of this federal election security money, that same bill, when it was passed in 2003, contained the exact appropriation that was requested by then-Secretary of State Kiffmeyer. But fast forward a few years later, I wish I could say the same about 2018. In 2018, Congress and the President, to their credit, made available to the states millions of dollars in election security money under the same title, Help America Vote Act. The number was remarkably similar. It was $6.5 million in 2003 when Secretary Kiffmeyer requested and received every penny of it. We were allocated $6.6 million, and instead of getting it automatically, like 46 other states do, we were mired in this 5.30 morass, which allowed a lot of political threats and horse trading and delay. And as a result, Minnesota was 50th in the country, dead last, in getting this money. Instead of getting it in the spring of 2018, we got it in the summer of 2019. That has made our efforts tougher in 2020. There's no question about that. Do I feel good about where we are? Yes, I do. I'd feel better had we had that money earlier and could deploy some of the resources earlier and in a more efficient way. And so there's real consequences and real harm from making it part of the political process. And so I think this compromise today while, you know, not absolutely ideal, would still maintain some legislative oversight. There always was oversight. I would argue there always will be, because there's a state match required for these federal funds. But be that as it may, this would still require insight without having to do an affirmative proactive bill that goes through the legislative process, has to pass the House, has to pass the Senate, has to get a gubernatorial signature, can be traded for all sorts of things that have nothing to do with elections, bonding provisions, tax bill provisions, you name it. That is in part, at least theoretically, what accounted for the delay of over a year in getting these monies. So I think this would set a good precedent going forward. It would avoid passing statutes that were seemingly intended to delay very specific kinds of federal appropriations. And so with that, Mr. Chair and members, I urge passage of the bill.
Yes, Mr. Nelson, Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think we had this similar question asked to the last committee, but you get authorization to spend this money and the future legislature does not give you the matching funds,
right,
where would those funds come from and how would that be handled? Could you still spend the money if they require matching funds? And where, if we didn't authorize them, where would those funds come from ultimately?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Nelson. So the way it works is the federal government says, both in 2018 and now with this next batch, I didn't mention that, at the end of last year, we got another second batch that is now currently pending, alive and kicking here in the legislature. And what Congress and the President said last time was, and this time, that we're going to give you this money, but there has to be a state match. The match is different. The first batch, the one we fought over for over a year, was 5% state match. This time it's a 20% state match. So they're asking for more skin in the game from states. We have 2 years to get the match. So you can start spending the underlying money before you get the match. There's always that risk that a state would not provide the match. It's not happened in any of the 50 states in either of the now three distributions of money, the 2002-2003 distribution, the 2018 distribution, and the late 2019 distribution. Literally in no state has the match ever been held up. But if that were to happen, our interpretation is probably that the federal government could claw back all of that money. So there's always a risk in getting out ahead of the match and spending too much of it, because if you don't get the match within 2 years, you might have to give it all back. And what do you do if you've spent part of the money and you have to give it all back and the bill comes due from the federal government? I don't expect that to happen. This legislature has been really good about realizing this is a bipartisan issue, although belatedly in some cases. I don't expect it to happen, but that's probably the short answer.
Representative Nelson.
Mr. Chair, I guess, well, the other option, I believe, would be there, and then I guess that's where I was asking the question, because the answer we had in the last committee dealing with the money that Representative Long's bill, Secretary of State's office would have to eat it if we don't make the match, then they have to come up with the money out of their existing funds, which you'd have to do on your own. The Secretary of State office would have to on its own figure out what they're not going to spend their budgeted dollars on to spend their money on this.
Chair Freiberg, do you want to speak on this? I forgot to ask if there were other people, sure, that wanted to testify. So,
well, yeah, no, oh,
go ahead and.
Sure, yeah, I guess I would just say short, quickly, you know, with the adoption of the amendment, too, there's an additional procedure in place that I think makes it probably less likely that would happen.
Good. Is there anybody present that would like to speak to this bill?
Testify.
Single.
There's somebody walking around, I guess they're not intending to come down and testify. Okay. Anybody else have a question from the committee? Seeing none, we'll go ahead and vote. All those in favor?
1 second, you have to renew your motion.
Oh.
That's right. So, yeah, Representative Freiberg, motion.
Sure. It's a good bill. I hope everyone will support it. With that, I would renew my motion that House File 3006, as amended, be recommended to pass to the Ways and Means Committee.
Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you.
Representative Bonner, you have House File 2766, and my understanding is it's going to the Rules Committee, as constitutional amendments tend to do. Would you like to move your bill?
Yes, Chair Freiberg, I would like to move House File 2766 to the Rules Committee.
Okay, thank you. Would you like to present your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This bill is actually pretty simple and straightforward. And in fact, if you notice on the author's list, you will find that I have gone out and made sure to include lots of folks from the other side of the aisle on this bill and get their stamp of approval as well. In essence, and about 10 years ago, what we did is we went through Minnesota state statute and we cleaned it up. We cleaned up some language to really basically make it modern, make it crisp, make sure that it identified with where we are at today, which of course has been done numerous times in our history. And this really is the culmination of finally taking the last step so that our Constitution will match the statute that we've already cleaned up. It does, again, it does kind of crisp up the language. For example, there are sections here that refer to the governor and Supreme Court justices, and in many cases they use the pronoun he or his, for example. We know that with current times that is already out of date, in fact, because, for example, when we talk about the courts and judges, it just so happens that our Supreme Court is made up of 7 justices, 4 of which are women. And the Chief Justice, of course, being Chief Justice Lori, and I hope I say this right, Gildea, is the Supreme Court Justice at the current time. So we know that that piece of it is already a little bit out of sync with our modern era. So, and what this does, and just to give a quick example for folks to see what I mean by this, how it will make it a little bit more crisp. For example, if it will say something like this: if the governor approves a bill, the governor shall sign it. It removes the part that said if the governor approves a bill, he shall sign it, and makes it just neutral, so that it follows the role rather than a particular pronoun of any kind. So it's really just clarifying and crisping the language and making it match the rest of statute, which we've already cleaned up. And with that, I do have 2 testifiers today to speak with you.
Okay. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Kristen Trapp. Okay. The Minnesota Constitution reads, "She is Commander-in-Chief. If she approves a bill, she shall sign it. If she vetoes a bill, she shall return it with her objections." Does that sound odd? Does it sound natural? Does it sound exclusive in any way? Or would it possibly make some citizens feel uncomfortable or perhaps even not as equally protected? And do you think if the Minnesota Constitution had said this for 160 years, that nothing would have been done to change it? Well, this is our Constitution, except it says he, himself, and his 69 times. Women are mentioned 0 times, I counted. When I myself was a legislative assistant, I was researching something in the Constitution when I noticed this, and I found it really strange. My legislators had never bothered to change it because it seemed silly. Here I am, and I'm female. I was working for a female senator. We have a female Supreme Court justice, a female lieutenant governor, and just women generally everywhere. That just seemed so clearly obsolete, and how was it not worth our time to update? So I asked Senator Pappas if we could do something about it because it's never too late, and that's how this bill was born. And it's not that we rarely have made amendments to our Minnesota Constitution. In fact, we have proposed over 200, and 120 of them have been adopted. Some of those adopted amendments have specifically been to remove obsolete language. And about 10 years ago, we modernized our state statutes to be inclusive and neutral. So this bill is a logical cleanup bill. It's bipartisan to simply align and modernize our Constitution to align with that statutory language. It does not alter the legal effect of the Constitution or substance in any way. And 14 other states have either already done this or are considering similar bills. Courts have also adopted the same approach. So we should be on the forefront of this progressive issue, as Minnesota often does. But what I think is most important about this bill is the impact on the next generation. I remember when I was in fourth grade, we all went around the room to say what we wanted to be when we grew up. And a very bold girl in my class said that she wanted to be president. And I told her that girls couldn't be president. And Mrs. Kronzer looked at me and told me not to talk like that. And I remember thinking I didn't know what I did wrong. I had only ever seen pictures of boys as president, and I just genuinely had assumed that girls didn't do that. But that's the thing. Our next generation of students and children, they look to us adults, they look at the language, our photos, and our actions, and then they make decisions on what they can and can't be in this world. As Chief Justice Warren said in Brown v. Board of Education, to separate children generates a feeling of inferiority, and it may affect their hearts and minds in a way unlikely to ever be undone. So let's not leave anyone out of our Constitution. Let's be inclusive, neutral, and modern. This is a simple, overdue cleanup bill to keep our Constitution modern. Let's make sure that when children say they want to be president, their classmates just simply cheer them on. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Trevor. Is there anyone else who would, there's a second testifier?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Heather Allison, president of ERA Minnesota. Wan that April with his sure suit, the drought of March hath perished to the root, and bath in every vein of switch the core, of which vertu engendered is the fleur. Language is ever changing. The words we use today are dramatically different from those used at the time of Chaucer, of Shakespeare, and from when the U.S. Constitution was drafted, and even from when our own Minnesota Constitution was created in 1857. From Botanica, language is a system of conventional spoken, manual, or written symbols, by means of which human beings, as members of a social group and its participants in its culture, express themselves. When we are speaking of core documents, such as the Minnesota Constitution, from which our very laws are formed and upheld, it is of the utmost importance that the language used reflects and respects its culture and people. When words like him and himself are used to describe Minnesotans as a whole, a disconnect is made from how more than half of Minnesotans identify. The words he and himself are by definition referencing male gender and therefore not symbolic of all persons. There are approximately 69 uses of him, himself, his in the Minnesota State Constitution. Imagine, if you will, that all pronouns used in the Minnesota Constitution had been herself, her, as the previous testifier said. This might cause discomfort and disconnection and a general feeling the document does not serve and protect all people. This is what happens when we assign gender-specific language to documents that are intended to serve and protect all people, no matter what their gender. We find ourselves in a place of opportunity today when we can ensure that all Minnesotans are represented by the very doctrines that serve to protect them. Change is not only necessary, but also inevitable. As changes have needed to be made in the past, we find ourselves at a time when we need to update these historic and influential documents so that they in turn reflect and respect the people for whom they are legally bound to serve. Updating the language of the Minnesota State Constitution so that it is gender neutral will do exactly that. It will ensure that the core foundation on which all of our Minnesota laws are bound is one that in turn protects and serves all Minnesota's people. The Minnesota State Constitution was originally two separate documents merged into one and has undergone multiple revisions in order to keep it current and purposeful, one of the most major which spanned 2 years from 72 to 74. There's no reason why amending the Minnesota State Constitution to use gender neutral language so that it truly represents and respects all of Minnesota's people should not happen now at a time when representation and inclusion matter more than ever. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Allison. Is there anyone else who would like to speak related to House File 2766? Okay, seeing none, member discussion? Oh, we're just flying through bills today. Okay, I guess seeing none, any closing remarks? Representative Bonner.
Well, as disappointed as I am to have no further discussion, I will say that, again, this is a really pretty straightforward bill. It really is about modernizing and crisping up that language to match our statute and make sure that it represents all citizens across Minnesota. And with that, I would thank you for your yes vote on this particular bill. Thank you, members.
Thank you, Representative Bonner.
And I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, I would renew my motion to move House File 2766 to the Committee on Rules.
Yep. So Representative Bonner renews her motion. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Representative Bonner. Before we adjourn, I would like to just let members know, we do have our permanent page for the session. So please say hello to Jordina, who's over there, if you'd like to stand and wave. It'll be great to have you on board here. Hopefully you find it an interesting committee. So with that, seeing no member discussion, we are adjourned.